Mini episode 865 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode number 865. You have with you today FDH Lounge dignitaries Rick Morris and Samantha Jones. She is our entertainment editor, and we are here for ultimately a pretty sad purpose. We are paying tribute to the life and times of Chester Bennington, and we have done tributes on this show in the past when folks have passed away, and I would say the spectrum pretty much goes as far as how easy or how difficult it is in terms of having done these. The Gordie Howe one that we did about a year ago, he's a guy who was a hero of mine, but, you know, he lived to a ripe old age. One could even say he skated a few extra periods, as it were, because he got some health care in the later years. He had some health boosts that people didn't see coming, so he made it to a pretty advanced age and was doing pretty well up until near the end. And so that wasn't a very difficult one for me to do, as much as the guy was a hero of mine. I mean, he's truly a guy where you can say he got everything out of life. I would have liked to have met him, but you can't have everything. So that one was tough. Prior to this one, I'd say the one that was the toughest, we had on Dan Weldon, two-time winner of the Indianapolis 500, about, I'd say, 5-6 months before he passed away. Very tragic car racing accident. And so myself and FDH Motorsports editor Mike Petek went back and kind of relived that interview and talked about his life. And there was a lot, unfortunately, that was left undone, leaving behind a very young family. And so unfortunately, we are much closer on that end of the spectrum today with our Chester Bennington discussion because, again, so much left undone, so much that was packed into his 41 years, but it's ultimately a very sad story, the way that this came about, and this will hopefully be therapeutic for me and for you, Sam. I know that, you and I have been going back and just reacquainting ourselves in the last couple of days with his life, his career, the trajectory of Linkin Park. You and I, both huge fans. Of course, your husband, Jason, our senior editor as well, who I had invited to be a part of this discussion. But Jason, choosing the greater good as always, he thought this might be better formatted if it was just between you and I. And I think he made the right decision on this. I'm really looking forward to hearing what you have to say about all of this.
Yeah, the thing with Linkin Park is they were really the first band I chose for myself to be a fan of.
Mm-hmm.
Because growing up, you know, my dad was a music teacher, and my mom was an assistant teacher at the dance school and everything, so it was a very musical family growing up, and I was raised on, like, Journey and Styx and all the bands like that. There was a lot of musicals, so, you know, I was a big theater nerd, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, really, and then when I got older, my brother was like, hey, here's Ozzy Osbourne, you should come to Ozfest with me, so, you know. But Linkin Park was the first one that I remember back in the days of TRL when they first really hit big with One Step Closer. Coming home from school and sitting in my living room, like, who is this band? What is this voice I'm hearing? And then just, I went to school and I talked to all my friends about it. I'm like, hey, yeah, I have their CD. Let me bring you a copy. You know, because being the young pirate I was, I didn't want to spend my own money. But yeah, so I listened to that album and I'm like, no, I need to give this band my money and went a copy so I'd have a good copy of it.
Uh-huh.
And just I wore that. I didn't know you could wear CDs out, but I did.
Yeah. I think a lot of us have, certainly with Hybrid Theory. I mean, it's my favorite album of all time. Meteora is not far behind, and it's one of these things where, and my favorite single of all time is Paper Cut, and it just what they did on the first couple of albums there. And again, with your background that you mentioned there with your parents and talking about that type of music. Maybe what I'm about to say to you is going to kind of ring a bell here, but as far as the way that they burst out of the gate, it reminds me of nothing so much as one of my other favorite bands. And again, my tastes are all over the place. And ironically, I think this is a band from the year that Chester Bennington was born, Boston, 1976, their self-titled debut album. I mean, you look at Hybrid Theory and you look at Boston, and it is, they're two different types of music, to be sure. But as far as opening statements for a band, I mean, they're on the short list that anybody's ever done, ever.
Oh, absolutely. I agree. With their first single, I never heard anything like it, and it really started that whole, they were a part of the new metal movement that they had with Mike Shinoda and his rapping and everything. They started that, what they call it, rapcore or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I have really grown to hate those kind of, like, we have to label every little bit of music.
Right.
But, yeah, like, nothing had ever been done like that before, and it was really, really like, hey, we've come up with this. We've taken all of these different genres and mashed them together. Here's this amazing thing for you people. And really, yeah, and I, with Hybrid Theory, I would agree with people because it's definitely the best song off that album, but Saint from Meteora will always be my favorite song of all time.
Yeah.
I remember, you know, driving back and forth to that song, just screaming at the top of my lungs with it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think we all have memories like that of listening to songs, particularly off of those two albums, the great remix stuff that they did with Jay-Z. And I remember, you know, in subsequent years, in talking about this, when some friends of ours were doing a music show at the same place that we were broadcasting at, the Sports Talk Network back then, Anthony and Matt Patrone and Tony Mazur with the Unheard Scene. I remember that they were talking about this. I joined them on the phone lines one night, and I think Tony was kind of cracking up a little bit about all the different ways that Hybrid Theory had been, you know, chewed over and redone and everything. And I said to them back then, I said, look, man, if they did a Brazilian bottle jug blowing remix of Hybrid Theory, I would buy the CD. Like, I don't care. I love it. They can slice and dice that mofo all the ways they want to. I will buy every incarnation of it. I mean, and that is the sign of a great album.
I don't care if they do the whole thing on a recorder, I will buy Hybrid Theory in every incarnation.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, just pure greatness as far as everything they brought to it. And it's funny because
it was just genius songwriting.
Yes.
Yes.
It was amazing. And again, and I'm not a huge rap guy, but again, my tastes are very diverse. I like it when I feel like it's well done. I don't like a lot of it, and that's the thing that I love. So I love Shinoda because, I mean, to me, he's the top of the pyramid as far as doing it well done.
Jason and I have had a number of discussions about this because he's an old school rap.
Yes.
He likes Wu-Tang Clan and the Tribe Called Quest and all that, and I don't like any rap music.
Uh-huh.
Like, the closest I like to rap music right now is 21 Pilots, you know?
Right.
But yeah, Mike Shinoda, he's definitely special. I meant, like, when Fort Minor came out, his side project, I bought it because I was always the biggest Mike Shinoda fan girl. You know,
mm-hmm.
I just...
Sure.
I love that man. But, because, the pure talent is just incredible.
Oh, it is.
So, of course, I went right out and bought Fort Minor because I'm like, I love this man. I have to buy everything he ever does. And I played it, and I was like, oh, my gosh, Jason needs to hear this. So immediately played it for him, and he's like, this is it. This album will save rap music.
Well, I wish that it had been able to, basically. Unfortunately, it never got the kind of creative reception that me and you and Jason and other people thought that should have been attached to it. But it's funny because, again, I was chewing this over, and I'm sure there's going to be all kinds of interesting takes here between me and you today, because that's just the nature of me and that's just the nature of you. But one of the things I was thinking about, this meme that has popped up a lot the last couple of years, when I'm thinking about the byplay of Bennington and Shinoda on stage, because it's a thing where, of the two, and I'm just talking about their onstage personas, that you look at the lyrical content, I would say in almost all cases, it's equally vulnerable. But Shinoda just, it was always his half of it. I'm a big fan of Chester as well, but it was always Shinoda's half that I enjoyed, I would say, even more, because to me, it's like it's an aspirational thing. Like Shinoda, his persona is that of a badass, and Chester is wailing out these emotionally raw lyrics, and there's nothing, I mean, he's so great and talented and whatever, but there's nothing that you would call cool in the classic sense about that. So I'm kind of thinking in my head in recent days, this meme of you and the guy she tells you not to worry about, that meme, like we all want to we want to think that we're Shinoda, but there's a lot more Bennington in all of us in the stage persona than we want to admit. It's an aspirational thing to watch Shinoda's stage persona, but Bennington is the reality a lot of times for a lot of us.
We were talking about the differences between their delivery, and Shinoda's always kind of more, he's the more introspective side. Here's what's going on inside my head.
Right.
Let me try and explain it to you kind of thing. Chester is the pure raw anger, let me scream it at you.
Right.
And I think that's what I like about him, is because, you know, being, when they came out, when Hybrid Theory came out, I was, was it 2000? I think I was a junior in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And I was your typical angsty teen at that time. And so I was like, yes, this person speaks for me. So let me learn how to scream along with it. And I remember I was taking, of course, my family being so as musical as it is, I was taking all kinds of voice lessons and instrument lessons and everything. And I remember listening to that album, like, I want to learn how to scream like that without hurting myself so my voice teacher doesn't get angry at me.
Right.
I still can't do it.
Well, and that's the funny thing, too.
Let me try.
Oh, yeah. You know, and you look at bands that have the capacity to do that kind of thing, and it's a thing where I think it's all the more extraordinary when it's somebody like me that is identifying with a lot of what they're doing, because I tend a lot of times to be typical meathead, where I'm not, you know, so much into the lyrics. Does the song kick ass? Do I like it? Et cetera, et cetera. And I tend more to be that way. I can't really think of any other bands where I think lyrically it has just spoken to things that I've gone through and been through and whatever. And I think that's one of the things about them. Again, the ability to reach somebody like me in that kind of a way, there's a universality to what they do. And it's a thing where when you would listen to that, when you would hear Chester belting out that kind of thing, and when you realize the popularity of them, and you realize that other people were listening to it in the same way, I think it was sometimes a good coping mechanism to know that, you know, other people go through the same kind of crap in their head that you do.
You know, that's a good thing. Well, I have a lot of that similar type of thing happening with the fandoms I'm involved in now, is because, you know, after, I remember when Minutes to Midnight came out, you and I listening to it and being like, what is this? And we were kind of disappointed.
Right.
And, you know, that album slowly grew on me, and, you know, after I listened to it a few times, and then, but I kind of fell off the Linkin Park bandwagon at that point. Which made me really sad, because they were my all-time favorite. They were my number one band at the time. But, so I went back into diving headfirst into musicals and everything, so. But in the past couple of years, I've gotten back into actually listening to the radio and things like that. And, you know, like, Fall Out Boy has become my favorite band. And they are actually, I feel like they are very similar bands. Not in sound, but in what they do for the fans.
Sure.
Because, like, if you listen to the song, like Fall Out Boy's new song, Champion, okay? First time I heard it, I was like, yes, this song is amazing. It's incredible. They're my number one band, so of course I'm going to love it. But then I listened to it again. I listened to the song about 10 times in a row. And at the third time is when I started crying. Because I really, like, the lyrics, like, hit me really hard. If I can live through this, I can do anything. You know, because I don't want to get into the whole past of things. But I've had some rough stuff happen in the past few years.
Sure.
And it really struck a chord with me. And then when I got the news of Chester's death that day driving home, I, of course, pulled up Meteor. I'm like, I'm listening to this for the next week and nothing else, you know? And what song was it? I think it was Breaking the Habit.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Which is one of my all-time favorites.
Oh, yeah.
Vocals on that were insane. But it's one of those things where, like, yes, you remember loving the song, and the song is musically incredible, but if you really sit and think about the lyrics, it is one of the most painful songs that you could listen to, because it, you know, it talks about him, you know, you think I'm safe here in my room, is something like that, is one of the lyrics. I can't remember off the top of my head right now, but especially with the circumstances surrounding the death, that really, kind of punched me in the chest.
Yeah.
You know, sitting in traffic, sitting in traffic, and I just, like, a single tear started, and then it was just like, I was a mess the entire way home. And then, of course, was Fish on off of Living Things, that album is where they really kind of, they came back to me kind of thing. But that, the song Rose Untraveled is really what got me.
Well,
I highly recommend every single person needs to go and listen to that song.
You know what? I'm going to do that. And again, I wasn't as big of a fan. I don't want to say that. It's not that I wasn't retroactively a fan. I'll say I wasn't a fan so much of their last couple albums. But listen, I'm going to go try and rediscover them right now, give them another chance, because this is all we got, basically. I mean, it's a finite thing here. There will be projects in the future. I don't think there will ever be new Linkin Park. So, you know, the catalog is finite. I'd love to have, well, I mean, it wouldn't make the whole news with Chester any easier, but I would love, selfishly, to have Shinoda come out and say, yeah, A Hybrid Theory was only about 20% of what we recorded at that time. We have a bunch of other stuff that we're going to release. You know, I'd like to think that's going to happen. It's not, you know, it's going to happen, probably, but, you know, I'll go check it out again.
What I would really love is, they did a DVD back, I think it was around Meteora, maybe. It might have been Hybrid Theory. I don't remember which album it is right now, but it's called something like Frat Party at the Pancake Festival or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's been forever since I've watched it. It's all like behind the scenes on their tour.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, give me more of that. Give me everything you have recorded behind the scenes of you and guys just hanging out, like writing, recording, just on tour, stuff like that. Because Chester was hilarious. He was always funny.
Well, and that's one of the things where I wouldn't be surprised if they released some of that kind of stuff in the years to come, because I think there's a large part here of they can kind of, now that this sad thing has happened and Chester is gone, essentially they can kind of control the narrative from here. And I think they want us to remember him a certain way. They want us to remember him the way we want to remember him. And that kind of stuff will help in that way. And paradoxically, that's one of the things that made it really hard the other day as you're digesting the news, as all the tributes that are coming in. You and I never met the man, but we have a picture in our head of what he's like. And to hear from all these people that that's exactly what he was, everyone kept referring back to what a nice person he was, such a kind person, and just this person that you always wanted to believe that he was. He actually really was that guy, according to everybody who really knew him. And you start thinking about that, you start, similar to what I said before about Dan Weldon, a young family involved here, 6 kids total. It's a hard thing on a human level to deal with in that way. And again, I saw something the other day, and it was this was kind of almost a little bit comforting to see. And you may or may not have seen it. He was doing an interview with somebody, and he was talking about, you know, very frankly, some of the demons in his head, and when he's able to put them aside, basically, and as far as, you know, good Chester.
Inside my head's a bad neighborhood. I shouldn't be in there alone.
That's right. That's the same one. Yeah, people should go check that out. And that, again, unfortunately, it's when he was alone and he was vulnerable to this that happened. But it's a thing where it, in a way, it almost helps me to listen to the music without being as sad, because I started thinking to myself, you know, obviously everybody in the media is talking about it was on the anniversary of Chris Cornell's, or well, his birthday, I guess. It was on his birthday, and that was a possible contributing factor here too. But I started thinking to myself, again, we never grasped until this happened the full extent of the darkness of all of the stuff in the music here. You hear it, and it's like they're expressing darkness, but they're pushing through it. Well, he did not push through it in the end. But it's a thing where, and I started thinking that, like, is there a part of him that was afraid of going out and playing this again at this point in time? What toll does that take on him? But then I listened to that interview about how he's good a lot of the time, and then there's just other times when the demons hit him, and I start to maybe justify it to myself that maybe he was okay going out there playing the material. I don't know.
I think that's what really hit me going back and listening to it, was you can see in every album and almost every song, you can hear that tiny cry for help.
Yeah.
You know, especially with songs like Breaking the Habit. And like Paper Cut.
Yeah.
Even. I got that voice in the back of my head.
Yeah.
It's like they start the album right away telling you that this stuff is going on inside my head, and it's bad. And you have that going on too, you don't have to be alone.
Yeah, and that's where it helps. And that's where, again, and like I said, I think what's truly extraordinary about them is, like I said, the fact that I am not typically somebody that finds a lot of deep meaning in any type of music. It's the exception to the rule when I do, and this is something where, as you and I were talking about this on Facebook the other day, that it's a thing in particular. I believe it was on Meteora with Something or Somewhere I Belong. That was the year that my mother passed away, and that is by far the darkest time in my life. I hope that it will always remain the darkest time in my life. There may, you know, who knows what lies ahead, but it was very bad, and it was a thing with me where it was very, very destabilizing. Because people who have strong senses of self, I know that you do, I certainly do, it's a thing where when you start to question that, when you don't feel like yourself anymore, and you have a strong sense of self, it's very hard to get through that, because you don't feel like you have any kind of strength. So that was an aspirational song to me, because it was a thing where I need to push through to find some kind of positivity on the other side. And 2003 was also the year, it was the genesis of everything ultimately with the FDH Lounge. That's when I started doing some programming with the Sports Talk Network, met all of you guys, made a lot of friends, whatever. So in a way, that song sort of hinted at what was ahead for me. And so I've always taken that kind of meaning from it.
Yeah, how long has it been now? 6 years?
Yeah.
Since my daughter passed.
Yes.
There was a very long, very dark time. And songs like that one, and really, really Hybrid Theory and Meteora, those two albums really, especially songs like Breaking the Habit, because, you know, there's something that needs to be talked about. We need to, like I saw on Twitter, we need to destigmatize the discussions about depression and things like that. I have had a pill addiction off and on for many years.
Okay.
And after my daughter passed, you know, they could deal with it, and I was 34 weeks pregnant with her when she passed. So they gave me a lot of painkillers because, you know, I still had to go to childbirth and everything. But so I kind of fell back into that, you know, taking too many painkillers and, you know, just being a general mess and everything. And I would sit and listen to Breaking the Habit and Paper Cut, and I don't know why I can't think of song titles right now. Where is it? Oh my gosh. So basically all of Meteora, because Meteora is that's my top album for that.
Sure.
But the song, what song is that off of Hybrid Theory? The song Runaway?
Yes.
Yes, that song. I would just get in my car sometimes and just drive around and listen to that song and like try to collect myself and then go back and be able to be with my family, you know, the rest of my family.
Sure.
So really that got me through a pretty dark time as well.
Yeah, and that's the power of this music, and it goes back to something. And I remember having a discussion on this show in 2009, and when I was talking with one of our FDH Lounge dignitaries, very distinguished TV critic from New York, Adam Buckman. We were talking, and it might have been his first appearance on the show. We were talking about when Michael Jackson passed away, and this whole thing about there was a lot of questioning in the media about, oh, why are people identifying so much? Why are people so sad? They didn't know the man. And I said to Adam, I said, let me give you my theory. I said it's because, I said, you know, I'm a child of the 80s. I said, I was a kid when Thriller came out. I said, so many of us have so many memories intertwined with all of that, with all of the great music and listening to it. And it feels like a piece of yourself is gone. It's a psychological thing. It doesn't literally mean it's true, but just, you know, psychologically, I think that's how you feel. It's the closing of a chapter. You know, we're sad for Chester, we're sad for his family and friends, whatever, but as far as being sad for ourselves, it just strikes something in us, I think, where it just feels like the closing of a door, and that's never an easy thing in life.
Yeah, I was talking to a friend of mine about this, and the day I the day he died, my friend Eric actually hit me up on Facebook, and I hadn't spoken to him in a little while, and the first thing he said was, "Are you okay?" Because he knew how big a fan I was. And, you know, we had a brief discussion, and it's like, I was a huge David Bowie fan as well.
Mm-hmm.
And when he did, but that situation it's the same, but it's very different because, you know, he was sick and it wasn't exactly unexpected.
Right.
If you know what I mean.
Right.
But something like this is just, it's a punch in the face, you know, plus he was young and he was, depression is an illness, but him taking his own life is very different than wasting away from cancer. And it's just one of those, I had said to a lot of my followers on Instagram and things like that, with the kind of relationship I had with Linkin Park's music and things like that, it's kind of like, it's an old friend that you haven't spoken to in a long time and then hearing they passed away. It's one of those, you don't realize how much it's going to hurt you until it happens.
That's a great comparison, yeah. And especially, again, you know, you and I being people who, I think, as far as the latter half of their catalog kind of being estranged from it,
mm-hmm.
That mm-hmm. we did not continue to regard them on that level. And it's a thing where, you know, there are times when things happen. I mean, the last thing I would say, the last music one that really hit me pretty hard, I would say, it's interesting you mentioned Bowie. Everybody, you know, talks ad nauseum about everything that happened in 2016. But one of the ones also early in the year there, Glenn Frey, and that was a thing where, it was a thing where, because again, I just, you know, the Eagles are probably also in my top five, if not that, at least top 10. And it's a thing where, you know, and you and I sort of, this is one of the things we were talking about on Facebook the other day here. You were thinking, well, that's the end of the Eagles. Apparently not so fast. Don Henley smells some money here. So, you know, not necessarily. I think we can probably take this one at face value. Linkin Park, not being a bunch of melodramatic guys, they don't have an immediate statement on this. I think the cancellation of the tour speaks volumes about where we're going here. This is the kind of thing where
absolutely.
I would not be surprised in the time to come if it were a thing. I was trying to remember off the top of my head the other day, and I didn't remember who it was. Paul McCartney performing with somebody, I think, where he was. I don't remember if he was performing with the guys from Nirvana. I think it might have been at one of the award ceremonies and stepping in for Cobain. I could see like a one-off like that. You know, if they're at a show and somebody comes in and does it, like I could see one-off type stuff, but nothing more, you know, sustained, no touring, no new material, so to speak. I think you had pointed out on Facebook to me, they may reform under another banner. There's probably going to be more Fort Minor, you'd have to think. But as far as basically dragging the name through the mud, which it would be if you're doing it without Chester Bennington, I think we can, you know, I hate to jinx it, but I think we can say that's not going to happen.
Well, as you see, they put out a new logo, too, and you know how they have it, usually the L and the P with the circle around it, or they've kind of made it angular, but they just took off some of the sides.
Yeah.
And I saw that earlier today, and I was like, oh gosh, why did I agree to do this show today?
Uh-huh.
So,
well,
but yeah, I was lucky enough, I believe it was 2007, I did get to see them on Project Revolution Tour, touring, oddly enough, with Chris Cornell,
mm-hmm.
And really got a sense when they were on stage that they were a family.
Right.
You really got that, like, the interactions between Chester and Mike and Rob and Joe, Dave, and Brad, they had that tight feeling, like, yes, we're brothers kind of thing. And they were just, they're just so sweet to the fans. And you could just see on Chester's face how much he loved his fans.
Yeah. Yeah, I really believe that that was the case, and that's, again, what everybody around him has said in the time since. All who knew him well, all who were touched by him and what he did. And this is a thing where, and this is one of the things I was kind of venting about when the news comes out. You vent about a lot of different things here, including some things that are, like what I'm going to say, trivial by comparison. But this whole thing that, like, again, you talk about the genre and people want to put it in the whole rap, rock, new metal, however people want to label stuff, you know. And because there was a lot of stuff in there, and again, I'm somebody with no shame as far as what I like. I've said it a lot of times. I like a lot of stuff, so I like a lot of stuff that's going to be unpopular. You know, we did a segment on the show once, the worst of the worst of Rick's iPod, where I did the bracket balloting here, you know, and like, you know, it was that was when we were still at the Sports Talk Network. The show was going to be on my birthday. I was like, I have to do a roast of some kind. And all of the music that people think is bad music that I like is the perfect material. So, you know, I have no shame in my game. Have I listened to a lot of Limp Bizkit, POD, all the stuff people want to crap on? You're damn right. And I probably would even today. But it's a thing where...
You let your freak flag fly, right?
I do, man. I do. I love cheese metal. You know, Nelson is still big with me. And, you know, my brother, I'll never forget his comment, which I quoted on the air because he was one of the voters on this thing. I had the four brackets there, and one of the four brackets was cheese metal. And my brother was like, you could have done the whole thing as cheese metal. So, you know, that's,
hey,
you know, I like unpopular stuff.
Don't feel
stuff.
Bad. I'm a 34-year-old woman that is possibly the biggest Fall Out Boy and Panic at the Disco fan right now. So,
see, I love Fall Out Boy too. I love Fall Out Boy because I'm basically what I would call a reverse curmudgeon. Curmudgeons a lot of times will be like, oh, the music today is not as good as when I was a kid. I'm a reverse curmudgeon. You think you kids got it bad listening to Fall Out Boy? You should have grown up in the 80s when we had Wham and Howard Jones on the radio, you know? So, I mean...
You've been listening to Loverboy.
Yeah, like, today's pop, exactly. Today's pop is so much better than when I was growing up. You know, at least I'll say the rock-infused stuff. I'm not going to speak to the non-rock stuff. But, you know, today's pop rock's better in my estimation. But, I mean, people have really thrown out the baby with the bathwater as far as, like, the early 2000s and the whole, what was I thinking listening to this stuff? So that's one of those things that just on a human level really annoyed me, was how much people in recent years, all these too cool for school a-holes have been like, oh, yeah, Linkin Park, I listened to them when I was younger. And it's like they weren't even turning on Linkin Park for some of the reasons you and I have cited, like, you know, the stuff subsequently, we didn't like the direction they were going in as much, whatever, but, like, retroactively, like, oh yeah, I listened to Hybrid Theory when everybody was, but it's like this whole thing of like the because it sold 30 million units or something like that, that it just was like, what was everybody thinking? It must have been mass amnesia at the time. No, it's because it was a great album. So the way that people
it's
have crapped on it,
how dare you appreciate their talent?
Exactly. The thing of like, and I almost kind of get the sense sometimes too, like, you know, oh, you still like Hybrid Theory? And I'm like, well, yes, and I always will. And Meteora.
Of course
and
I still like Hybrid Theory.
Right. It's just an annoyance to me that it's like, it unfortunately, it takes something like this. And that's life, basically. It always takes the passing of somebody really big to get people to kind of take a real look at it as they should. And, again, you know, so many things that come out of this. You touched on it before, and I want to circle back around as far as, again, and I never really know the difference between the two classifications, whatever it is, but whether it be mental illness, psychological illness, whatever, but things that people deal with. The thing in the case of Chester Bennington that, again, who can say for sure, but had it not been for... and hopefully something very, very, very bad happened to that guy. The guy that diddled him when he was a kid that unfortunately set him on this path. That these are just things that, you know, on the societally, on that, you know, meta scale, I think we are doing better than we were a couple of years ago in terms of understanding these kind of things. Certainly me personally, I've known more than one person that has struggled with these types of issues, and it is a very difficult thing for them and for the people around them and whatever, but I really think we are getting to a point where these things are better understood and to where, you know, we can talk about these kind of issues and hopefully help get people the kind of assistance that they need so that this kind of thing does not happen as much. Because, again, the demons are very powerful and they are very real. And, again, as we saw with Cornell earlier in the year and with Chester just this past week, anything can happen at any time. But when people talk about, you know, hopefully something good on some level can come out of this, hopefully there will be more of a sense of people hopefully in some kind of way just, and it feels weird to say because I don't want to minimize anybody's struggles when I say push through it or whatever, but, you know, find another gear, find some help, whatever. Hopefully that is what comes out of this, is that it can in some way help other people who themselves are on the edge.
This is what I really love about social media. So it feels like things are getting worse because things are talked about more, because you have more access to news stories, you have more access to different types of people. Thing is, those conversations are helping those people. I talk to so many, because I'm such a big Fall Out Boy fan, I follow the fan accounts on Instagram and things like that, and all their Twitter accounts, and these are usually high school age girls, and almost every single one of them talks about their level of depression or the anxiety they're having or the trouble around with school or they're being bullied. And the sense of community that these fandoms can build, I think really helps with this. And I've seen a lot of people who on these accounts who I didn't even know, like Linkin Park, they saw the thing about the news and they said, "Hey, I saw that this happened. I know I'm really upset about this. If you're really upset about this, you can come to me anytime and talk." And I've personally made friends that I will never meet in person, but are some of my closest friends because of the conversations we've been able to have, these things like this.
Yeah, and that is good when people can band together and deal with these things in a way, because whenever you've got the collective strength of other people behind you, that certainly helps. And again, just the sad irony of this, of that maybe in some kind of a way, this can be some kind of a lesson or some kind of, again, I don't even know how the mind works in this way, but just that it can be something of where if somebody is able to confront, the alternative of this, sometimes it just takes seeing that. Sometimes it just takes, it's an abstract a lot of times, and I don't want to speak for Chester Bennington in that moment, because I think the demons were in control, but at some level, the pain that he was leaving behind was an abstract thing, but when you see it with other people, when you see the devastation that it leaves behind, maybe that can help too, as far as getting the help that you need, because nobody consciously wants to do that to their family and friends.
Yeah, if you go to chester.lincolnpark.com, it's a tribute site, basically. It says hashtag RIP Chester with this beautiful picture of him. And it has the Suicide Prevention Lifeline, which is 1-800-273-TALK. The number for that is 1-800-273-8255.
Okay.
But I have this thing here. The statistics show that only 5% of teens are willing to call phone crisis lines, but they're more willing to text. So if you feel more comfortable texting and you want to reach out to someone, it's 741-741. And you can text anonymously with a crisis counselor. And that's not just for suicide prevention. That's any sort of depression, anxiety thing you're going through. You can talk to a counselor through that. Or the last one is facebook.com/crisis text line is another way you can get to them.
All right. 741-741, you said?
Yes, you text hello to them.
All right.
Crisis counselor will be in touch with you.
Well, and again, and I can say personally that, again, the effectiveness of these types of things and the commitment of the people who are involved with them. And again, all of us, I think, have a lot of tangled webs that are weaved here. A number of years ago, on behalf of somebody who was a good friend of mine, I knew that they were very much on the verge of doing something unfortunate, and it was a thing where I ended up calling a thing in their area on their behalf and just kind of like getting some ideas, like what can I do to help them and working it through. So you're a little more limited when it's...
The Suicide Prevention Lifeline has that option as well if you want to help someone else.
Yeah.
Help yourself option and help someone else option.
Exactly. I mean, and in the spirit of full disclosure, there's only so much that can be done in that way when you're calling on behalf of somebody that obviously doesn't even know you're calling on their behalf. So you know, it's ironically, it's an easier, smoother set of circumstances if you are the potentially suicidal person yourself, because they can work directly with you and hopefully reach you. But it is worth looking into. I just want to say, on behalf of somebody else, because I've done this, and again, I felt like they did a very good job and they did everything they could to kind of advise me in helping to handle the situation. So, you know, these are definitely things where I'm glad but not surprised that Linkin Park is going to take the opportunity here of the awareness of this to try to help keep it from happening to other people. Because in the end, we come back around to this, being the good and kind man that Chester Bennington has been described by his friends as being, I think that's one of the sad ironies of this. I think he would be horrified at the thought that something like this is potentially driving other people to that. And I think for somebody that really wanted the best for his fans, I think it would be the best way of honoring him is to try to, in whatever way, help keep this from happening to other people, help people break this cycle that they have. And again, you know, I think there is progress that is being made as far as understanding mental health and psychological health issues, you know, in this country. I think at a societal level, we're grasping this better than we were years ago. And hopefully enough so at this point in time that this can possibly help other people at the very least.
I definitely agree with that. And on this RIP Chester site they have going, they have all the hotline information, and then they have anything that has hashtag RIP Chester or his name or the name is popping up, and it's just fans, you know, sending condolences or sharing memories. And it's really kind of an online wake, and it's kind of beautiful as I'm scrolling through some of it here.
Well, I'll have to check that out as well, and I'm sure any other big Linkin Park fans and fans of Chester would appreciate getting to check that out. And, as far as what happens with the rest of the band from here on in, who knows, except that, again, I think we're both pretty sure they're not going to be an ongoing recording/touring unit under their name, but probably just, I think, from here on out promoting their legacy and Chester's legacy. And again, very talented musicians there and the rest of the band that I'm sure are going to go on to do some other great things. And it would be cool if it was some or all of them together, if it was under another identity.
Absolutely.
But them still pushing forward to do their thing. And again, I know it's very difficult on them. It's very difficult on the family, on those six kids. Yeah, I've spent a decent amount of time thinking about that the last couple of days and how hard it is on all of them. So just, you know, again, yeah, our thoughts and prayers for everybody that's involved in this thing more closely. We're big fans, but obviously there are people that are involved at a much, much closer level than all of the fans, as important as they were to the band and as important as the band was to us. So there's a lot of them that are having a tough time dealing with this. And again, you never know as well. Who would have thought when the Chris Cornell thing hit? I don't know that I knew how close he was necessarily with Chester, but it's a thing where unfortunately these things can kind of have ultimately kind of a domino effect. So I certainly hope that this thing with Chester doesn't further destabilize anybody that was in his inner circle at the very least. I hope the chain stops here, as it were. So in terms of looking at this thing, in terms of, you know, the life and the legacy of Chester Bennington, I'm about all tapped out on my thoughts. You got anything else, Sam?
No, just right. He was one of my all-time favorite voices, and I'm pretty snobby about bands that I listen to. If you've had a music conversation with me at all, you'll know I'm very picky about the list. And he was very near the top of the list. He was in my top five, and it just breaks my heart for his family and the rest of the band. Because when you have a writing team like him and Mike Shinoda, and the closeness that you have to write the kind of stuff that they did, it just breaks my heart.
Yeah, it's very difficult. Obviously, it's a tough time, and that's a thing where you and I certainly wanted to push through this, and I think this is therapeutic for us to record, and this is hopefully therapeutic for anybody else to listen to in this tough time. And it's going to be just a time ahead, hopefully, for as much as possible, trying to stay positive, celebrate the life that was lived and all the things that were done. He packed a lot into 41 years, and it's obviously so awful that it couldn't go on further than that. But what a life he lived, and a lot of joy and help that he spread along the way to other people, not least of which me and you, Sam, and certainly Jason as well, and so many of us out there also who loved what they did. So it has been a pleasure.
The first year that Jason and I were married, his big present to me was a membership to the Lincoln Park Fan Club.
Nice.
Well, before we go, I just want to put these hotlines out.
Yes,
there one
please
more
time.
Do. The suicide prevention lifeline is 1-800-273-TALK. That's 1-800-273-8255. There's also a text line. You text hello to 741741. You can also message them at facebook.com/crisistextline. And then if you are outside the U.S., there is a suicide.org/international suicide hotline website that you can go to.
Well, very good, very good. Because again, you look for whatever kind of glints of light you can at a rough time like this. And again, as we've said, if this could help make a difference for anything, for anybody else that is dealing with this kind of thing, then at least there's that. So we can always hope that that would be the case. And again, you know, I keep using the term sad irony, but that's the exact thing that Chester would have wanted for his fans or for anybody else. He wouldn't have wanted anybody else to go down the way that he went down. So
very much would have wanted them to get help. So.
Yes, yes. And help that he himself ultimately was not able to get. But again, as I say, therapeutic for me, hopefully for you, Sam, and for anybody else listening to this.
Thank you.
To get through this. Real pleasure breaking it down with you as I knew it would be. Thanks for being available for this.
Hey, it's a pleasure as always, Rick.
I appreciate it, Sam. Thank you so much. Thank you, everybody, for listening to FDH Lounge mini episode number 865.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.